Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome back to Radio Gorgeous, Jill Hornby.
Thank you for having me.
You have come back with your second novel, All Together Now. Could you sum up for us All Together Now?
It's about a community choir that at the beginning of the novel is in crisis, and it's the choir that belongs to a community that is also in a state of sort of terminal collapse. It has a recruitment drive and three characters who all have different sorts of emptiness in their own lives join in and find their lives and their destinies changed.
And similar to The Hive, which was your first novel, it does have these, the sort of drive of these three characters' stories in it. But it is a cast of characters. And it is, you know, sort of the microcosm of a whole town.
Yes, it is. I like writing about communities. I think they're absolutely fascinating. I think I was a bit dim about communities when I was younger. Mm. But now I'm older, I can see that actually they're the most important thing around us. And if we only just all looked after our own communities, then the world would be a wonderful place. So, yes, I try to... it is the anatomy of a community, really, and coming together in a choir. And a choir seemed to me the most perfect metaphor for a happy society, in that if you're singing in harmony, everybody's playing their own part, but together they're making something completely different. And the weak are carried by the strong. And there is a terrific intimacy and friendship and a lot of laughter when you get together and do something in a group like that.
And it also brings together people who, other than this one desire to sing, you wouldn't normally meet.
Exactly, exactly. You find yourself sitting next to all sorts of people that you wouldn't necessarily choose to. But it's incredibly... I belong to a choir, which is why I started to write it.
Yes.
And it's very intimate, standing next to somebody and singing at the same time as them and clapping and clicking and shimmying and all the rest of it at the same time. It is a bit, quite an intimate process. Mm. And you sort of... You leapfrog into a whole new level of relationship that you don't if you're with somebody you're standing next to in the supermarket. You know, you get to know people and you just become close, whether you plan to or not.
Yes, yeah. And it is different from the school gates, in that, because people are sort of known through their children at the school gates.
Also, they're all the same age group. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a choir, you can be 18, you can be 108. And I think that is, a lot of choir members will find that familiar. That, I mean, my mother is 90 in October and she still sings in a choir every week and has done since she was 14. So every single week, you know, she's never missed anything apart from holidays. So it is a much broader range and a broader social range as well, I think, you know, because schools are slightly sort of self-selecting, whereas choirs just aren't. You know, a proper community choir will have everybody who lives within a few miles of it. And so it's the most perfect melting pot.
And it creates community beyond the borders of your household as well. Because I think one of the things in modern living is that you can not know your neighbours.
Exactly.
Even in a smaller town.
You can live an incredibly crowded life and be actually essentially very, very lonely. I mean, a lot of people just sit at home in the evening talking to friends in Hong Kong or Australia or whatever and not actually knowing who on earth lives next door. And a choir is one way of getting us outside of our tiny little bubbles and into a bigger bubble.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
And so let's talk about these three characters, Annie, Tracy, and Bennett, who have their own personal journeys through this.
They do. Well, actually, the novel did start out as a novel about empty nests because The Hive was about school gates. And then I thought, well, I'm now in a different phase here. Two of my children have gone. One is very rudely doing A-levels and planning the rest of her life, which is beyond our door. And... And I can see all my friends, you know, lives suddenly changing colossally. So I thought I'd do an empty nest one, and it was going to be called the Museum of Childhood. And really, it was really gloomy. And so everybody had to, because I didn't want to write gloomy books. It's not why I was put on this earth. So I felt that all the characters needed to sort of get a hobby or interest, like indeed I have. And in fact, they all started joining a choir. So then I turned it inside out and made it a book about a choir, which drew these people in. Mm. So yes, they are all, their children are just leaving, or in Bennett's case, his wife and children have just left, and he's been made redundant. And he's lived in this town for over 20 years, but he's just been getting on the train every morning, getting on the, back on the train every evening. And in fact, he has no connections to anybody at all beyond his own front door. So it changes his life a lot. Trace is a single mother who's been belting to work and back just for the last 22 years, and suddenly her son has gone, so she has to find something beyond where she's been living. And Annie is Mrs. Community. She does endless things. She works in the library and she volunteers and everything, and she runs this and she runs that, but she is essentially not really being herself. She hasn't found her own voice.
Yes. And also the town itself, in a certain sense, has been made redundant.
Yes.
It is.
Well, like
is...
huge amounts of English mm-hmm. towns, actually. I think the general election really pointed this out to everybody, what people who live outside London like me, what we know, which is that the gulf between London and the rest of the country, it might as well be thousands of miles away. You know, where in our towns, the high streets are not absolutely buzzing, so buzzing that you have to have pop-up shops on a Saturday because there's so much merchandise that can't be contained with a, you know, all of our high streets look like a row of rotting teeth. That is mm-hmm. what they look like. Everything's closing down. Everybody's on a train out. The worst thing in the world, in my personal opinion, is the retail centre, which means that on Saturdays and Sundays, people get in their cars and drive away from their towns and away from their high streets to some out-of-town site in the middle of nowhere that doesn't even have a coffee shop. And then they just sort of get out of their cars, juggle around it, and it's just destroyed any sense of community mm-hmm. spirit. I grew up in a small town, and Saturdays would involve just a progress from one end of the high street to the other, meeting people and chatting and catching up. And that's what it used to be. That's been destroyed by the internet, by out-of-town retail sites and so on. And so many people work in very sort of specific purpose-built places. Like along the M4, there are these huge sites of just office
retail
blocks.
Retail parks.
And also industrial ones.
Yeah,
so that you drive to work, you go into a basement, you take a lift up, you go into your office, you take the lift down, you drive out of the basement. If you wanted to go to the pub with your mates, you couldn't, because there isn't one for about 20 miles. And people can live very, very busy lives and feel very lonely.
Mm. And the whole structure of what it means to be a town. Annie's character comes into London, and it sounds to me like that's your voice.
I'm not quite as alienated as Annie. I do sort of struggle up sometimes. But yes, you come up and you feel like a foreigner.
Yeah, that it has
which
no
didn't
relation.
Used to happen.
That it bore no relation to your life as you live it outside of London.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I really do feel like that. I mean, of course, you know, there's hideous homelessness and all the rest of it in London, like there is outside. But there isn't the same degree of sort of grinding lower poverty, I don't mm-hmm. think. I mean, there's huge amounts of wealth in London that simply does not exist anywhere mm-hmm. else anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's become very top heavy. I say in the book, actually, that it's as if the country has been lifted up at one end and all the good stuff has rolled down, you know, trickled down into a puddle in one place, and that is what it feels like.
Mm, and slid away from all these.
But anyway, it's not a miserable book.
In fact,
because the choir brings them all back together again.
No, it is a very joyful and very fun book.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
I also wanted to talk about, because, you know, on what I really like about your books is that you don't bother with the unnecessary things. You don't bother with, I will give you a for instance, the results of the singing competition.
Mm.
the ins and outs are not important. You don't burden us with them.
No, because it's all about the impact on the singers. It's actually not about a man standing up and saying, you know, well, we really enjoyed the Swing Low, Sweet Chariot from the. No, I cut all that sort of stuff out. It's really only the emotional impact of the
emotional impact and the relationships that carry on. Yes. One relationship I wanted to explore, because Annie is a very, she goes through a blossoming, I would say.
Yes.
You know, sort of a late stage blossoming. But one of the things that she sort of snake-like has to shed is her relationship with Sue.
She does, yes. I mean, I think we are all burdened by friends who have frankly outlived their usefulness and passed their sell-by dates and went rotten quite a long time ago, and we haven't thrown them out yet. And she's got this friend, Sue, who's become more and more bitter. And whereas Annie is also middle-aged and her children have also left her and her husband is also doesn't seem to be coming home very often, she really doesn't want to be made toxic by that sort of bitterness. And she has a more optimistic, positive view of the world. And she also connects with people. And she gets a huge reward, actually, from the fact that she cares about everybody and does so much for everybody that in the end she gets it back.
Okay, so there are a lot of choral and musical puns that we could do. Are you enjoying those? Or are you not?
Well, e.g., what do you want to throw at me?
Well, no, I'm just saying, you know, like the big book we have.
Oh, the marketing people.
Yes, exactly. But yes, they're very funny.
Singing praises.
Singing praises. Yes, exactly. Is that getting tiresome or no?
Not yet, no, because it hasn't come out. As long as they're singing my praises, and I can't think what the negative thing will be, but I don't want to, want to be told that it's falling flat or tone deaf or anything like that. So we'll keep that one away.
Right, exactly. Oh, well, I also thought it'll be very timely when it comes out, because we're gearing up to Eurovision without revealing anything.
Exactly.
We are in Eurovision season.
I think this is an unusual novel in that it has a strong Eurovision content and it has a flash mob. And I think it might be literature's first flash mob. Well,
fantastic.
And that was inspired by the fact that in my choir, we had to do a flash mob in Basingstoke Shopping Centre. And while I was standing there out in the piazza, singing, dancing in the street to people outside Costa Coffee, I thought, well, this has got to be material. If it's nothing else, it's material. So the flash mob made its way into my novel.
Okay, so tell me about what that's like. Because to me, that's very interesting, because I think that's probably very much outside of your comfort zone.
Mine?
And
you don't know the half of it.
but the support of the choir.
Exactly. Well, what happened was I joined this choir, which is called Rock Choir. I don't think they have it in London, actually. I think it's another out-of-town thing.
And we do rock
and pop and soul in three, four, five, six part harmony. And I went along because I'm not a pop star, much to my surprise, because, in fact,
that was
for 20 years, for 20 years, I just thought I was going to be a pop star. And then here I am in my 50s, not a pop star. So I went along, and at the first session, the leader said, so the first thing we're going to do is a flash mob in Basingstoke City Shopping Centre. And I thought,
oh my.
No, I'm not. Don't count me out, matey. And the woman next to me said, are you doing the flash mob? And I said, no. And she said, why not? And I couldn't think of a reason other than I'm stuck up. I'm above it. You know, I'm standoffish.
So I said, scared.
So I said, all right, then I will. And then I went, and it was absolutely brilliant to just, because there were 200 of us. So, you know, actually with 200 people, you can do anything that you would never do in a million years. But to stand outside yourself and see your own life, you know, see your own life from a different perspective, it was absolutely wonderful. And my children weren't best thrilled when it fetched up on YouTube, but you know,
Mom!
Nora Ephron, my great hero, her phrase is everything is copy, and I thought, well, Nora would say this is copy.
I can use this.
Yes, so I do. It is a pivotal scene in the book.
Yes. And would you recommend everyone join a choir?
Absolutely. You know, because there are lots that are very professional and scary, you know, the Bach choir and blah, blah, blah. But most of them, there's no audition needed and it doesn't really matter. It's fantastic exercise. It's spiritual. It lifts you so much and bonds you to other people and takes you out of yourself. And at the end of every session on a Monday night, we're all high as kites. You know, we're all like the Stones coming off stage. We need kind of drugs to get us down again, but we don't. We drive home and have a hot chocolate and go to bed. But it does sort of elevate you, and it's just the most wonderful thing.
And so is it something on, most people get a case of the Sundays, you know, it's like, oh, the working week's starting. And you're like, great, Monday night,
exactly,
coming around.
Exactly. It's wonderful. Yes. What are we doing at the moment? Time after time. It's just absolutely beautiful. Time after time in three-part harmony. It's just beautiful.
Jill Hornby, thank you so much. For struggling into Radio Gorgeous. It was another arduous trip to London.
And yes, exactly. I won't come here again.
I've done it. That's it. London, dead to me. Thank you, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production 2014, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.